Well, as you can hear this morning from Bill Shorten and from that interview there with Simon Birmingham, the major parties are clearly in campaign mode, and we do expect the Prime Minister to call the election any day now. Scott Morrison has already moved to set the tone for the battle. He's going hard and he's going negative.
They want to tax you all, Mr Speaker, and tell untruths about the government. So, Mr Speaker, as we go into tonight's budget response from the Leader of the Opposition, all I suspect we'll hear is once again, Mr Speaker, what we will hear is what I suspect will be put out there at the next election, more Labor lies and more Labor taxes.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison in Question Time yesterday, and earlier this morning, your opposition leader, Bill Shorten, we heard, wants to make a looming election a contest on tax and Medicare, promising tax cuts for lowest income earners, those earning under $40,000, and billions in funding for cancer patients. $2.3 billion was the promise made last night. Well, to discuss what's ahead and what's just gone on over the last week, we're joined in our Parliament House studio by Michelle Grattan, Chief Political Correspondent with The Conversation, Catherine Murphy, Political Editor of Guardian Australia, and Paul Bongiorno, a columnist with the Saturday paper. Welcome, all of you, back to breakfast.
Hi there, Fran.
Look, let's get the guessing game out of the way first. I'm going to ask each of you for, you know, a one-word answer, basically, when you think this election is going to be called. Catherine?
Oh.
Come on.
Oh, Sunday.
Paul?
Well, I hope Sunday, but it could even be called at the end of next week.
Michelle?
A two-word answer, no idea, but Simon Birmingham says it's pretty imminent.
It's imminent. Okay, let's move on. Bill Shorten's budget reply speech last night was a de facto campaign launch, really. He, you know, presented pretty confidently, clearly brushing up some of his best lines for the campaign. And Labor is going to use Medicare again, front and centre in that. This major cancer pledge, $2.3 billion over 4 years to cover the cost of cancer tests and treatments. Catherine, do you think this pledge, this cancer pledge as a centrepiece, will connect with voters?
Well, it was interesting because it was much more a campaign launch speech last night than a traditional budget reply. And I think that reflects the judgment that people, Australians, vote earlier now in electoral contests, and you can't afford to hold really big things back till late in the campaign. In terms of the initiative itself, I mean, you asked Bill Shorten some good questions, I think, this morning, Fran, about the detail of that, you know, the over-servicing, whether or not specialists bump up their own fees. All of those questions are totally legit, and I'm not sure we got a particularly sort of definitive answer to any of those points. But with that said, I think this is a major connection point with the Australian voter, with the Australian community, and I think the speech was heavy on connection points with ordinary voters, and that was the point of it. It was a sort of message of empathy. I get, you know, that people haven't had wage increases for a long time. I get that low-paid workers feel very squeezed. I get that the Australian community's deeply frustrated with inaction on climate change. I get that young people are ready to, you know, drag boomers into the street and kill them because of, you know, the sort of intergenerational unfairness. I get that, you know, so many Australians are battling cancer or have relatives battling cancer, and we want to make that experience easier for you if that's possible. There was just loads of connection points, which I think is probably a good way to start an election campaign.
Okay, I'm going to come to some of those other points, but just a quick one from Paul and Michelle on the centrepiece, that $2.3 billion cancer spending package. Paul, does this amount to anything like that could be ramped up to some kind of Mediscare campaign that was so effective against Malcolm Turnbull at the last election? What's Labor trying to do here?
Well, Labor's trying to get on to its turf, health, education, as we know, their strong points. This is not a Medi-scare in the sense that it's not a negative. It's not saying, you know, vote for us because the government's going to destroy the world and Medicare as we know it. It's saying vote for us because if you talk about tax and spending, whatever tax you give us, this is the way we're going to spend it. And I think from that point of view, it's beginning to turn back on the government, the attack, the core attack that Shorten is offering a big taxing, big spending Labor government.
Yeah, Michelle, that was singled out. He sort of confronted that head on, didn't he, Bill Shorten, last night a couple of times with that line, do we want the best healthcare system in the world or the biggest tax loophole? Yeah. Do you think, Michelle, that's going to help him neutralise the government's attack over the fact, you know, Labor is planning to take away a lot of tax concessions from a lot of people?
Well, just on the health initiative, I think it will be popular, but I think it's interesting that actually it's a total contrast to Mediscare in a way, because this is a positive initiative and Bill Shorten is picking up that people are sick of the negatives. So he's using the health issue, but in a quite different way this time. Now, I don't think he will be able to keep it really at the centre of the campaign, because I don't think the government will want to get into a particular stoush about this. They might try to push it away. They might try to match a bit of it or whatever. But I think the campaign will be on the sharper, more contentious issues. Cancer is not going to be a contentious issue. It's a matter of how much you give to help patients with it.
Okay, one of those contentious issues that we've just made reference to already is Labor's $200 billion of tax changes that come from things like winding back tax concessions on negative gearing, capital gains tax, there's the tax credits, the imputation credits. The government is going to go for broke on those. In his reply speech last night, Bill Shorten, you know, peppered it with references to women, particularly women who are under that $40,000 earning cap. He said Labor's going to give you more tax cut there. So very strongly aiming it at women and also young people. This is really how he set up the defence of Labor's controversial negative gearing changes. Let's listen to that.
But you cannot have property investors playing with loaded dice against our young people, Generation Y and the millennials. And instead of patronising millions of young Australians with lectures about cutting back on smashed avo, why don't we tell them the truth? The intergenerational bias that the tax system has against young people must be called out. A government must be brave enough and decent enough to stop the bias against first home buyers and young Australians. And we will be that government.
Catherine, the intergenerational bias the government has against young people, strikes me that if you look across a range of Labor's policies, a lot of them are aimed at sort of plugging into that feeling in the millennials and Gen Y and Gen X. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the sort of focal points of the voters are disaffected in Australia for a number of different reasons at the moment, but there is this sort of quite pronounced sense that I was sort of referenced in the comments I made at the start of our conversation, Fran, about young people wanting to drag boomers into the street and set them alight. I think that's that is a real thing in Australia at this point in time, and it is interesting that Bill Shorten is quite naked about appealing to the next generation of Australian voters, many of whom registered to vote as a consequence of the plebiscite on same-sex marriage. Labor is going for that demographic in a very big way and recruiting them to the progressive side of politics. And we've seen various people on the Liberal side of politics in recent years fret about this, fret that they sort of lack a connection point with young Australians. And I think Shorten feels that's a structural advantage. He's going for it. He also feels like that's a cloak that he can put around some of those revenue measures and reframe some of those revenue measures. And also women. It was really pronounced, the speech last night, the appeals to women on a number of different fronts. And I know there are people in the government concerned that women, you know, the women are deeply browned off with the government about climate change, about a number of issues, and that's dangerous for them.
Paul, what do you think about that? Will it put that cloak around some of those measures that the government's going to go for broke on, you know, Labor's negative gearing changes, for instance?
Well, Catherine's talking about connectivity, and I think that Labor is much more connected not only with the younger generation, but with the general populace on key issues more than the Liberals are, or the conservative side of the Liberal Party, which has been dominant in policy terms. And climate change is another one. Younger Australians are worried about climate change, worried about their future. Younger Australians are saying that they'll never own their own home. There's a whole lot of issues like this. And of course, what we're seeing in the framing of this election, it's quite interesting. We're seeing trickle down versus trickle up. We are seeing the end after three decades of bipartisan consensus on neoliberal economics. This, the people of Australia are being asked to vote on how do you want your governments to serve you and to fund the services you're demanding. And I think that this is, if you like, is the fissure that runs through pre-election debate.
Michelle, let me go to you on that, because of course we also heard this week Josh Frydenberg's first budget laying out the spoils that the coalition has on offer, it says, because of strong economic management. And a lot of that, of course, was the tax cuts, that $158 billion over 10 years. But in the short term, money in people's pockets very quickly, a lot of people's pockets, if they vote the coalition back into government. Now, will that resonate? Let me give you one of the listeners has written in. This is Chris saying, Fran, there are many older Australians who are traditionally Labor or Green voters for whom this is the first election. Hang on, I've just lost it here. For whom this is the first election where they are tempted to let the hip pocket nerve override their broader social conscience. Is Labor going to retain the ability to contribute more to super, regardless of age, up to that $300,000 from the sale of the family home? Also, are they going to match the budget measures of letting 65 and 66-year-olds contribute without meeting the work test? So, Michelle, you know, should you ever underestimate the hip pocket nerve at election time?
Well, no, but just on the income tax cuts, I think that what Bill Shorten has managed to do is neutralise the immediate cut, because he's matching them for middle income earners and he's bettering them for lower income earners. Now, this available tactic was clear, and Labor was talking about it even before it saw the numbers the other night, and indeed had its statement out as Josh Frydenberg stood up to deliver the budget. So on this core issue of the income tax cuts, I think that Labor has taken that first tranche off the table. Now, you might say, well, what about the later ones? But they come years on, and even though Labor's opposing them, I don't think that'll do them a lot of harm, because people see that as a bit out in the never-never. And also those cuts, as time goes on, are skewed to higher income earners. So I think on the income tax package, you've really got a pretty equal game.
I actually think, picking up on that point, yep, that Michelle, a speech made yesterday by Peter Costello picked up on that, that he says the voters are alert to the fact that if you're promising tax cuts that are three elections away for their finality, people are saying, well, give us a break. This is a pig and a poke. And the next thing is, if they're so ambitious on tax reform, why haven't they delivered it now? They haven't delivered it now because to deliver it would either put the budget into deep deficit, or they'd have to be draconian in the way they cut back tax concessions and tax outlays. And there was a graph in the budget papers that showed just that. To get to the sort of flat earth tax policy that the government has put up in lights would see a dramatic revolution, if you like, in what governments can do.
You're listening to RN Breakfast, our Friday political panel, Michelle Grattan, Paul Bongiorno and Catherine Murphy. Of course, the government's plan and all that money and all those tax cuts was to, and the surplus, of course, the surplus and paying down debt, was to set itself up in that debate over we are the best ones to trust with the economy. You can't trust Labor to deliver a surplus. There's going to be another scare campaign. Well, there's going to be a number of them probably, but I think we're building up to one, aren't we, Catherine, over Labor's emissions policy. Mm-hmm. The government's attacking it as a wrecking ball through the economy.
Yep.
Do you expect this to be a big issue in the campaign, and how much pressure is there on Labor to come up with modelling on their, particularly their sort of baseload and credit scheme?
Well, the Labor has put itself in a weaker position by not having modelling or having a carbon budget which would allocate the sort of tonnage of emissions reductions they're expecting in various sectors. It would be, you know, quite handy to have that information in the public domain. As for whether the sort of big carbon tax that wasn't actually a carbon tax, as Peter Credlin told us later, scare campaign being sort of rolled out in this election campaign, I do think the government will try it. But I also think, and this is as a result of feedback given to me by people from both sides of politics, major party people on both sides, that climate change is featuring in this election in a way that it hasn't since 2007. I think a number of Australians are deeply concerned and see the sort of inaction of the Parliament on climate change as a proxy for what, for governments not working anymore, for Parliaments not serving the interests of the Australian people. And I think it is harder in that climate for the government to bowl up a scare campaign when they have been exposed, I think, for scare campaigns in the past. Now, does that mean that there's no resonance to the government's sort of positioning? I'm not saying that, because, I mean, the thing about scare campaigns is that people bowl them up because they work, because they resonate. And it is ambitious. A 45% emissions reduction target by 2030 is ambitious. It will involve transforming the Australian economy. Very
quickly, Paul, because we're nearly wound up and I've got to get to the campaign. Just very briefly from you.
Well, I was just going to say that often for scare campaigns to work, and in the past, is it's because the prospect of the future is scarier than the present. But after a summer of extreme weather, people know that the present is very scary, and they do believe what the scientists are telling them. It's going to get scarier unless we do something dramatic about it.
Okay, but of course the sums always scare people too, so you need to get that out in a credible way, I think. Michelle, and I'm going to ask all of you finally for one brief answer on this. But Michelle, to you first. We heard at the top of this Scott Morrison, not once but twice yesterday, coming out with this line about all you're going to hear during this campaign from Labor are lies and taxes. All they've got to offer you are lies and taxes. That's a pretty tough start to the sort of the tone of this campaign. Do you expect this to be a tough campaign? And do you expect it to be sort of gloves off?
Yes, I do think it'll be gloves off, particularly from the government. I think obviously they're desperate. They're going to throw everything at this. But the danger for them is that they might have misjudged the mood of the people, and that mood is fairly dark and also wants positives rather than negatives.
Catherine?
Well, I think that Shorten gave us a big hint last night that he's going to try and frame the electoral contest in positive terms as far as possible.
Yes, he was all very positive this morning, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, there will be negatives during the campaign, but I think his overall disposition is to go positive, to project a sense of incumbency, even though obviously Labor hasn't been in government for two terms, but going positive it projects that sense of incumbency, and it dares the government to go negative.
The government has gone into this campaign with both hands tied behind its back. The government has gone into this campaign with its credibility in tatters due to the fact that the person leading it is not Malcolm Turnbull, but it is Scott Morrison.
Okay, and just finally, again, from briefly from you, where do you think we'll see the leaders spending most of their time, Paul?
Well, I think they're going to spend a lot of time in Queensland, and possibly Bill Shorten will be over in WA a fair bit as well.
Michelle?
Well, certainly the key states will be Victoria, Western Australia and Queensland, and I guess that will dominate their travel, but that travel will be very broad.
And Catherine?
Yeah, I agree. It's Victoria and Queensland determine the outcome of this election, in my view, and I think that there'll be a well-worn path between those two places, and as Michelle and Paul have referenced, WA is important as well, and so is Tassie, for that matter.
Okay.
They're all important.
They're all important, and that's always the case in Australian elections. They always end up pretty tight in the end. Catherine Murphy, Paul Bongiorno, Michelle Grattan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
It's been a very busy week for all of you down there in Canberra. Michelle Grattan is Chief Political Correspondent with The Conversation and Professorial Fellow at Canberra University. Catherine Murphy is Political Editor with Guardian Australia, and Paul Bongiorno is a columnist with the Saturday Paper.